love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings. The first thing, the important thing, George, I've mentioned before many times, I've invited you to hike Big Frog Mountain. The plan was to do it again with my friend Chris in February, but it was a cold February, plus I got a little delayed in getting my boots resoled. I got them today. One of the problems is these are size 13 now. I wear a size 13. Wow. But, I get these in particular because they're extremely light. And when you put a lot of miles in them, light boots mean a lot. The soles, when I buy these, because I bought these came in July of last year. It has, I think, a leather sole or whatever. And they last maybe a month. So the sole gets replaced with this rubberized one. It has a little bit of a tread to it. And I think this has only been replaced once. This is the second time the sole has been replaced. Now, I bought this in July, and this is the second sole in it. But the heel, this is about fifth, sixth, or whatever, because I do the heels about every 4 to 6 weeks. Depending upon what time of year it is. I'm doing it less in winter and about every 4 weeks in summer because I just go through them. But the important thing is, you notice, this is a high heel. they call them the cowboy heels or whatever. And I found this is almost the largest they make. They make one slightly larger, but this is what I found for this particular boot. And I just picked them up today. And of course, the guy polishes nice work. I'm really appreciative of the quality of the workmanship. The guy does a really good job. And I've been going to him now for years. This is probably the fourth pair of boots that I've used with him. Because I buy these, and these are Lucchese's. It's kind of like I used to wear, the equivalent of the Chevy cars, what I used to be in, and now I went to the Mercedes, the high end, whatever, it would be the Honda versus the Lexus or something of that nature, because I had some cheaper boots. Now I wear Lucchese's, and it's Lucchese. I mean, these are high end boots, but the amount of miles I put on these things makes them relatively cheap. So purchase price, $460, I think, this boot. Well, for the pair. But the price per mile, I'm sure, is a lot lower than if I go get, the chintzy brands. And, of course, light, comfortable. And see, one of the things I've noticed, again, I've mentioned about being a student of yourself. And one of the things I've noticed is that when I had different boots or tighter boots, when I was still at the size 12, my feet were sometimes would be sore and I had some other issues. Once I got basically to this brand and the light and especially up to the size 13, my feet feel better than they've ever felt since back in my 40s. I mean, my feet are doing really well. So again, I think this is the important thing about being a student of yourself and, investing wisely. I spend, when you consider replacing boots plus, getting the new heels, new soles on the boots. I put near $1,000 a year in boots. I put zero into a car. And of course, I put zero into things like medical care because that's a really good investment. So again, I would suggest you consider that. It brought to mind something, and because of that, because I'm having an interaction with a gentleman, we're talking about my statement: the Bible is true, and the institutional church is a fraud. Because he said many times that he agrees with a lot of what I state about the scripture, but he still feels that there is a license for the institution. And because of my, I took the hike today to pick up my boots, I got food and things of that nature, I thought about it, and so I wrote him what I hope was encouraging, because I analogize, well, okay, I don't know if I said it yet, so in case, on the boots, I don't think this weekend, but maybe next weekend, it might be the following weekend, Chris and I, hopefully we'll be hiking Big Frog Mountain. So the point is to George, I want to do it with you. I'm going to do it with Chris because it's a joy. Chris is a wonderful friend. He's my brother. And I find great joy in our time together. I want to do it with my son, George. And I asked for that. But when I was hiking today, a constant thing comes to my mind about the fact that when I hike, I'm not like most people. From the research I've done, as I expressed in the email, and I'll put a copy of what I did in the email with this video. When I walk, from the best of, you know, when I look at statistics and whatnot, it's less than 1 in 1,000 who will beat me. Because I'm tall, I'm, you know, physical, you know, good shape and so forth. And because I've done it, my body's been trained for it. You can't just simply be tall. You can't just have the characteristics. You have to train your body. Now that I've done it for years, and it did take years, it is really less than 1 in 1,000 will beat me. But the thing that really sinks in, there are those less than 1 in 1,000. And then there are the less than 1 in 1,000,000 that just blow me away. And what I find joy in is, as I mentioned in the email, I've seen it many times, but just a couple weeks ago, I saw a guy who was roughly my build, probably 30s or 40s, and I watched him run. It's kind of like, whoa, this guy was fast. And, you know, sometimes you see somebody run and they're running with, you know, some effort and they're going reasonably quick. But sometimes you watch somebody and it's kind of like every bit of energy is going into going faster and faster. Their body is trained. They have the abilities. And it's kind of like it's a grace. It's a beauty in what you see that they do. I can't do that. So when I watch somebody, again, walking, I can blow people away. Running, balance, coordination, I'm no competition whatsoever. And to see someone who's gifted at that and has trained themselves to do it, it's a marvelous thing. And the important thing is, it's not just physical. When you want to be a follower of Christ, it's the same thing. We're all going to have different sense of abilities, different characteristics. But it's not just abilities. You have to train yourself. And you have to wrestle with the Lord, the Genesis 32 thing. You have to struggle to know him well. You have to agonize the good agony. Fight the good fight. Struggle. Anyway, it is an effort, and it takes years and years and years. And I want to encourage others. I constantly strive to do that when I meet people publicly, when I interact with people face to face in their homes, wherever it is. I strive to encourage, not just be nice. I will challenge in particular things, proclaim particular things, but I want to encourage others to have that relationship with Christ. And it's not just simply, oh, isn't this nice? No, struggle to know him. Fight the good fight. Don't just say, oh, I'm pleasant, I'm nice, isn't this wonderful? It's a struggle. It's an agonize. Agonize the good agony. Agonize my, the good agon. I've said that over and over again. Anyway. The reason that the walking analogy sinks in so much is because I see people who are pathetic, but they're trying. When I see people who are pathetic, but trying to understand the Lord, I have a whole lot more respect for them and strive to encourage them. Because just like I may be able to beat them walking and they'll beat me running, I may be able to contend well better in this particular aspect of knowing the Lord, and they will show me another aspect that I'm pathetic at. And this becomes the body of Christ. We're not all, you know, the analogy that we see Paul using, we're not all arms or legs or, you know, things of that nature. We all have different functions. And we encourage each other. We encourage each other. It's just a big deal. I'm doing this in video again because when I did the video yesterday, one of the things that sunk in was there were a few points that I, because I watched it afterwards, and there are a few points that I saw. Well, you know, at 4 minutes and 15 seconds, I saw where I said I walked out to the post office instead of the mailbox. So I misused. I used the wrong word. Later, I said at 4 minutes and 50 seconds, I said I read my wife's email instead of my wife's letter. So, you know, it's kind of like I made a mistake. And, you know, that's normal in communications. And when we do something like we're doing here, where it's one way, you have no case. No, there isn't the ability to actually, is that what you really meant? Because the idea of saying, okay, I walked out to the post office could leave an implication that I actually went to a post office instead of just to the mailbox. You know, so, and some of those things may lead to a connotation that is wrong. The other thing I caught at 4 minutes and 55 seconds, 14 minutes and 55 seconds, is I discussed pride. And I discussed pride, I think it was in reference to MetaView or something of that nature. But the way it was said and the timing, especially what was happening, it could have been talking about my own pride. Yes. Do I have issues? Yeah, I'm imperfect. It is an area that I'm conscious of and try to be constantly repentant of. But see, what I saw in looking at that video is I said, well, you could get the wrong connotation the way it was presented. All those things make it clear the importance of dialogue. Because when I write something, when I do a video like this, when I leave a voicemail, it's not, thus says the Lord. I'm just a fallible man trying to express an idea, and often I'll express it wrongly. But in dialogue, those things can be correct. Did you mean this? I understood you to say this. I have this particular impression. This confuses me. What are you really saying here? I heard you say this. I think that actually, when I look at the scripture, it means you should be this way or that way and so forth. Dialogue is a marvelous thing. It's reminiscent because we had an unusually tense moment between Chris and I in a conversation yesterday. And we talked about that yet today, saying, you know, of course, because of the fact we have a relationship, it's kind of like, yeah, we didn't get it, the point across well, and we got limited in time because we talked on his lunch break, and it was kind of like, we got to fix this. We got to make sure we're clear about each other, and we are, because of the fact we have a relationship. It was easy. You know, it's easy when you have a relationship, and that's why dialogue and relationships are so vital. I want to encourage you on that. But one other thing came to mind because I've heard it again, and I made a mention of it because of the letter from my wife. I got a letter handwritten by my wife. It's kind of like, well, I look at this. It's just, it's beauty. It's remarkable beauty. But one of the issues that was discussed is the idea of masks. And it concerns me. It really does. Because, you know, I use the example over and over again about the mask being the armband of 100 years ago. And it's not a light duty thing. You know, one of the things, because I mentioned, I think you mentioned it was in the video yesterday, or perhaps it was in the email response I gave to my wife. There are a whole bunch of, you know, there are protests that have happened. huge protests, you know, gatherings in London and Berlin, in Paris, in Spain, and, various places throughout the world and the U.S. And they're attributed to anti-maskers. You know, in other words, people who say, no, don't violate my freedom. Don't impose on me. Don't use state authority to impose on me things that are irrational, the mask. So just like, again, remember, the National Socialist German Workers' Party is what they call themselves. But foreign influences says, we're going to call them something, a bad word. We're going to call them Nazis. Nazi is the derogatory term imposed on them. Anti-masker. You know, the thing that really fascinated me was for the 9/11 event. There are a lot of people who said, I want to know the truth about what happened of 9/11, because so much misinformation was out there. And it's been it's been going on for years. You know, the recent thing I find so fascinating, the Building 7 thing, and there's a video that came out called 7 about the third skyscraper that's rarely talked about that went down on 9/11 in New York. You know, 47 buildings, a four-story building, which looks kind of pathetically small compared to 110 stories, whatever the Twin Towers were. But it's still, that's a huge building. And it dropped in 12 seconds or whatever. I mean, so it fell at free fall speed, and it's a steel frame building. It's basically impossible without help. And so this team, architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, contracted the University of Alaska to do 3D simulation of it and to see how it could happen. And basically it can't without help. But you know, the point that's kind of a subtle point. The point here is that people who would do these were called truthers. Truther turned out to be a derogatory term, like Nazi. And that's the technique. It's called psychological warfare. You know, it's like the COINTELPRO. You know, you can actually look up. It's easy to find. COINTELPRO was a program done by the FBI in order to demonize particular groups. In particular, people, a lot of the black population, I think, I got to get these all correct, because there was a whole bunch of these programs. You know, a lot of it was demonizing people like Martin Luther King and somebody. Was Malcolm X part of it and so forth? They actually did things to encourage people, you need to commit suicide. I mean, this is the FBI doing this. The FBI has a history of this. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. But the point here is you get a derogatory term, Nazi, truther, and whatnot, in order to disparage a particular group. And the other thing that is current right now is the anti-masker. Because now you disparage the group. You don't want to be a part of those people. It is literally psychological warfare. And I mean, because like I said, if you want to study this, it's easy to find the history of how this is done. You know, a lot of people will study the document post the... what's the name of the group? You know, after John F. Kennedy was assassinated, there was a commission put together to Warren Commission to investigate and so forth. And the whole thing was considered a scam, like the 9/11 Commission is considered a scam by many. And you can see in CIA documents that the objective there is we are going to use the term. Conspiracy theorists. This is where that term became popular, in order to take somebody who questions what the government has reported, and belittle them. It's psychological warfare. So this technique's been used all the time. I've described before how in war you demonize the other party. I think it was in the N-words video that I did. You call, you know, if you're going to fight against the Japanese, you call them the Japs. You don't call them Japanese people. You call them the Japs. You fight against the Vietnamese people? No. You fight against the Gooks. You fight against the Nazis? No. Or the German people? No. You fight against the Krauts or the Nazis. Because you got to demonize people. So in the same way, you fight against the anti-maskers, because they're kind of beneath you and you can insult them. And then you can get the people who don't want to know more to say, oh yes, we need to wear a mask. Again, the important thing about the mask issue, there are decades, not just one or two, there are decades worth of study. It goes back almost 100 years where people, medical communities have studied the effectiveness of a mask. There was even one study in England, I believe it was, a long time ago, where they had two operating rooms. One operating room, no masks whatsoever. The other room, the normal mask, whatnot. Over a period of 3 months or whatever, no difference. So, because the point of the mask was to prevent literally spit from going from the medical staff to the patient. Not a virus or things of that nature. You don't want to spit on your patient. That was the point of the mask. And, I mean, if you do any study, you'll find, indeed, that is the importance of the mask. But now we have this idea that it prevents the spread of viruses. There is no evidence to this. You're listening to authority figures. But now that we've had months and months and months of people using masks, double masking, triple masking, things of that nature, we're finding that the number of people who get admitted to the hospital or even die from allegedly COVID-19, a very large percentage of them wore masks. So it's kind of like, well, is it helping? And then, of course, one of the things we do is, a year ago, it was talked about, just wait it out, and herd immunity will take over, and the problem will go away. You know, summertime will come, herd immunity will develop. But they took that term and say, no, herd immunity now comes from the vaccine. It's not a natural thing. It comes from the vaccine. They took the term and twisted its meaning. The reality is herd immunity comes when a large part of the population becomes immune, and therefore when it spreads in the population, those who are immune can get it and kind of it doesn't do anything for them. But those who are healthy may get exposed to it, and they build their own antibodies, and the immune system says, oh, look, there's something I need to take care of. Okay, no problem. I will notice that, and I will take care of it. And it's only people with, as it's called, comorbidities. They're in poor health. Again, if you look at the death rates and the illness rates, common characteristics, you have comorbidities. In other words, you have other things. You know, it's the last straw on the camel's back that I've described. You have those kind of things. Plus, you have other factors besides poor health. Obesity is like 80% of those who die are obese. And the other thing is apparently a huge, again, roughly 80% of those who are dying have vitamin D deficiency. In other words, they don't get much sunlight or, some vitamin D supplement via food or a pill, perhaps because they're staying indoors in lockdown. The lockdown is part of what's killing people. I mean, that's openly talked about now, too. So all these things are twisted. Herd immunity comes from, especially, when I was young, it was the idea, oh, look, somebody in the neighborhood, we're young kids. Somebody in the neighborhood has got the measles. Let's go have a party with them. So we all get the measles. We all get over it. And we're all immune for the rest of our lives. Those who don't end up with vaccines that have to be redone, and end up when they get older and whatnot, have things that are measles or measles-like that can be very harmful or fatal. Instead of doing it the way, allowing the design of the body that the Lord gave us, we intervene, we make the body weaker, and years later, it could literally cost you your life. So we're doing the same thing now. Because what's happening now, and a lot of people argue that the various vaccines right now are not really vaccines, but they're not. But I won't go down that rabbit trail. But one of the other things that's becoming very obvious now is the people who are getting most hurt by the masks are kids, for a variety of reasons. One, obviously, is they're not being exposed. When you're a young person, being exposed allows you to say, oh, my body's being exposed to these things. Now I can be prepared. So as I grow, my body has matured, not only my mind and my physically, but internally, my immune system has matured to be able to handle the world. You're protecting your immune system from preparing it. It is like, I'm not going to exercise my arms, so my arms become weak. You're doing the same thing to your immune system. I'm going to drive to the store instead of walking like I do, and your legs will become weak, and you'll become old early. You know, I'm not your typical 65-year-old. So when you have this idea, and I'm saying this because I just read this, that it is loving and caring for my young kids to wear masks, to interact with people, to show care for others, it's a fallacy. It's a lie. You've been deceived. You've been deceived in thinking that the state controls marriage as opposed to the Lord. You're being deceived to think the institutions who are claiming the importance of a mask, especially like the CDC, the World Health Organization, and so forth, they've lied to you all your life, demonstrably lied to you. You know, take one of the big events, the Tuskegee syphilis study done by the CDC. It was eugenics. They want to kill black people. And they killed a bunch of them. You take the various tests that were done where they would spray communities with various things, the CDC, in order to find the effects. You look at the vaccines that came out. I think it's one of the previous pandemics, swine flu or something of that nature. Vaccine killed more people than the disease. You look at the fact that when people are pushing you a vaccine, something that needs to sink in. This needs to sink in. People are pushing vaccines over and over again. When you get a vaccine, if I give you a product, if I sell you a drink, a tool, or whatnot, and I give you something, and I knowingly especially give you something that I know is going to cause you harm, you can sue me in, you know, court. If I give you a vaccine, you can't sue me. You can make a lawsuit, but the lawsuit's against the government, and the taxpayer pays it, and they pay billions. If you look at the lawsuits on vaccine, billions upon billions have been paid out over the years. But it's taxpayer funds. It's not the vaccine companies. The vaccine companies have no liability. I think they're the only company, only kind of industry there is. They have no liability against their product. If they give you a bad product, not a problem. Therefore, when they did, again, I think it's the swine flu vaccine, killed a whole bunch of people. No cost to them. None. Billions were paid out, but the taxpayers paid it, not the companies who did it. Over 1,000 people are dead because of the various vaccines for the dreaded COVID-19. Some people call it COVID-1984 for good reason. Lots of people are dead. Lawsuits will come. These companies won't pay a dime. So when you say that you are wearing a mask to be kind to others, you're not. You're being deceived. You know, I don't wear a mask for multiple reasons. One is the hike I took today, I probably would have passed out. Because when I walk, I'm because I'm walking fast. You know, again, 4.5, 0.47 miles an hour. That's fast. Especially when you do that for 8 miles. It takes the wind out of you. You put a mask on, you're going to pass out because the mask reduces the amount of oxygen you get. You'll find the most common complaint for people wearing surgical masks in the medical community is headaches because they don't get enough oxygen. The other thing that's happening is you know, when you exhale, it stays in the mask, much of it, not all of it. And then it comes back into you and it becomes kind of a farm right there for you to, you know, for it to fester and then to get back into you. You know, and there was, you know, I'm getting long again. I'm sorry. The idea that is loving and caring for others to wear a mask is absolute 100% bogus, especially for kids. When a kid wears a mask, when you see these people in these cubicles in classrooms now, it's cruel. That is not just simply, oh, a choice, an attempt to be wise or kind. No, it's cruel. It's child abuse. It is horrendous. You know, and they're see, the problem is, I can go on and on and on about this. The idea that it's loving to fall in line with the authorities who've lied to you, who are bought. Again, I don't want to get too long. When you look at who's behind the various vaccines or whatnot, they're eugenicists. I mean, the obvious one, obviously, is Bill Gates, who funds a whole lot of these things and then is making money hand over fist. And, of course, satisfying his eugenics objectives remarkably well. What's happening is not a minor issue. When I use the analogy of the armband of 100 years ago, it's not just a quaint analogy. It's dead serious. It's not a trifle thing. We are the Fourth Reich. I've said that. If you look at Operation Paperclip, there's your evidence. There's a significant bit of evidence. Because the people of the Third Reich, the people who did things like the medical community and these rather sadistic experiments that were done, they were brought to the United States with Operation Paperclip, and their progeny are in the medical community today doing the exact same thing. It's not a quaint story. We are indeed. There's your evidence. We're the Fourth Reich. It's the same mentality. It's happening again. And what happened back then? You point out a problem. You have to be silenced. Look at the silencing that's going on. You know, I mentioned the, because I just heard somebody talk about it again. The Great Barrington Declaration. I looked at it, I've read it, and I would say I'm not 100% on board with it, but it's a huge number of people who are behind this. The medical community, thousands upon thousands of people in the medical community are saying, we got a problem here. But you won't hear about it because all the videos they produced are taken down by YouTube. They have to be silenced. The various doctors and whatnot who've come out and said you know, all these things about the issues with the mask, vaccines, and so forth. When they're found, they're removed from the, you know, the YouTubes, the Twitters, the Facebooks, and so forth. They're silenced. We are the Fourth Reich. It's the exact same thing again. So when somebody says, out of respect for others, as a loving thing to do, we wear our masks, you've been fooled. You have been fooled. You've been led down a wrong direction. You've been deceived. And the cost of it is going to be huge. It's going to be massive. You look at the death rate right now, you know, from suicide, depression, whatnot, drug overdose, whatnot, that's increasing by far. Check into it. The discouragement level of life that people have, being trapped within their bubbles, imposed by the state, imposed by us, you know, the fear. And, you know, I've mentioned when I've met people and to see the fear in their face, don't come close to me, you're not wearing a mask. Don't live in fear. And don't impose fear on others by wearing a mask. It's not being polite. It's not being cordial. It's being deceptive. I wanted to do this in video again because I wanted to explain the things about the interaction and so many other things. I want to encourage my family. I'm in love with my wife. You know, when she met me, I was this younger guy. I was already in my 30s. And still, you know, fairly new follower of Christ. And I wanted, why are people killing their babies? Why do people, you know, that was me. I couldn't understand how somebody got that precious gift. We have a child. Let's kill it. We don't want to be inconvenienced. I couldn't understand that. It seemed wrong. And I became rather enthusiastic about saying, hey, this is wrong. And now I have 9 kids walking the earth. Because it's this idea of practicing what you preach. In the same way, I've learned about the Bible. I've tried to read that love letter from God and try to proclaim it well now because I am older. I'm an elder. And I'm called to be an overseer, which means to visit issues and people, which is exactly what I did even today. And to proclaim obedience to Christ, but not impose it. And to visit issues, to be the skeptic, episkopos, the root of that, skeptic. And say, you know, you think wearing a mask is loving? Let me point you to evidence that it's not true. Let me encourage you to love well. This is my act of love towards you. Let me also point you to the fact that the Lord defines marriage, not the state, not the institutional church. You won't see a marriage ceremony in Scripture. You see a celebration. You won't see remarriage. You'll see adultery. And you won't see divorce in the sense of how it's interpreted as a legal action by the state. You only see divorce as in a husband saying, no, I'm no longer responsible for an adulterous wife, but I'm not free for remarriage. The world twists this, but I'm an elder, and I will contend from Scripture these issues. And I'm waiting for anyone to offer any evidence where I'm wrong. Some do. The PCA, my own family, run and hide. I ask for at least some of them to stop that. Follow Christ. Christ's command is to love, including to love me, because I'm trying to love you. I got ridiculously long again. I'm sorry. I'm a follower of Christ. Christ calls us to proclaim. Proclaim what? Obedience to him. What is obedience to him? To love. I'm striving to love. I want to love the most important people in my life. My kids, my extended family, and number one, my wife. Because I love her. Because I look at this piece of paper, and I see she wrote this. The lady I love wrote this. And I still love her. I don't want to just touch the paper she wrote. I want to touch her and feel her touch of me. I don't want to hear just that same recording of, I'd love to call you back. I want to talk to her face to face. I want to embrace her. I want to feel her embrace. And I want to pat her behind. I love her. You know, again, on the health issue, I am remarkably healthy for 65. I'm remarkably healthy for 20. But one day that's going to change. It may be, it won't change until I'm dead, until my last day. And then there's my wife. I don't know her state of health. There's the possibility that her or I will have an issue. The person that needs to be there for the other person is each other, because we're one. I want to be there for her, and I want her to be there for me. You know, there's the example giving of some college president or whatever in South Carolina who gave up his position because his wife became whatever. And it was kind of, ooh, ah, don't you think I'm that way? I love my wife. There is no one else. There's my one and only. I love my wife. Here's the pictures of her. I love my wife. Oh, one other thing, it's interesting because there was a comment about George stating that he recently talked about the trip that he and I made to Huntsville. There's the picture of him standing before the Apollo 16 spacecraft. That's not a mock-up. That is the Apollo. That spacecraft literally went around the moon. And we stood there right in front of it, and that's George standing in front of it. An hour or so later, that's George holding a gun in Huntsville. He seemed far more at home there. But yeah, that's that day. George and I. And again, George, the boots, new soles, new heels, because, you know, the heels, I mean, I go through them. I mean, it's the bottom quarter. I mean, in a month from now, the bottom, you know, especially the back part of the back inch or whatnot, and the quarter, it's gone. I just wear it through because I walk on asphalt or concrete most of the time. And so this, I just eat right through. But this part lasts for many months. And right now it's... So hopefully in a week or two, these will be at the top of Big Frog Mountain. With Chris and I. George, maybe this summer. Let's do it again, you and I. I really want to do that with you. Big time. Maybe we even take others. Like the other guys. You know, your younger brothers. Maybe even the girls. Ooh. Maybe even mom. want to do that with you. But George, it's been in my mind for a long time. I want to walk Big Frog Mountain with you, George. Please, let's do it. So before this gets to be 3 hours, my lady, I'm your husband. I love you. And I want you back.